The British film Suffragette has Natalie Press in the role of Emily Wilding Davison, the suffragist trampled by the king's racehorse in 1913. At the end of that scene, a bystander pockets Davison's Votes for Women banner. What happened to that banner? Stay tuned to Wings.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Women in the British Parliament have very different party interests, but they do pull together around some issues. One of those is honoring the legacy of the women's suffrage movement, without which no woman would be in Parliament today. The most dramatic and therefore famous suffrage story is that of Emily Wilding Davison, who died from the hoofs of the king's horse on June 8, 1913. Today we'll hear recordings from Parliamentary Radio for Women about Davison and her memory. First, here's Linda Fairbrother of Parliamentary Radio for Women explaining how a relic from Emily Wilding Davison came to be displayed in Parliament.
Order, order.
It's hard to avoid the past in Westminster. Walk down the corridors and vast Victorian murals educate passers-by in key moments in British constitutional history. Turn a corner and you're confronted by the politicians and prime ministers of the last 200 years, embodied in very white marble, to remind the current crop that one day they too will fall silent and, if lucky, be frozen into stone for evermore. Now a very different relic has appeared in the corridors of Parliament. A silk sash. It's a simple thing, with holes and splits, in faded purple, green and white, and the words Votes for Women at both ends. It's the sash worn by Emily Davison the suffragette, who died under the hoofs of the King's Horse on Derby Day 1913 at Epsom Racecourse. Barbara Gorner is an author and scriptwriter who's been instrumental in getting the scarf there. The scarf was sold at auction, lot 550 at a Sotheby's sale in 1997, and was an impulse buy. But it's led her to research the women's movement, and Emily in particular, and she made some groundbreaking discoveries. In 1913, Emily Wilding Davison's death was reported worldwide. It was a horror story that confirmed many prejudices about the irresponsibility of women and their unfitness for the vote. A Pathé film shows her ducking under the railings at Tattenham Corner at the Derby, waiting for the king's horse, Anma, who was trailing in the race. Reaching up towards the horse's head, she is bowled backwards by the force, and all three, horse, jockey and suffragette, tumble. The horse and jockey survived, but Emily died 4 days later in Epsom Hospital from a fractured skull. Within 24 hours of the event, the press labelled her a madwoman and suicide, and that label stuck. But Barbara Gorner has unearthed evidence that indicates that Emily was not probably intending to die. She had a return ticket from Epsom. Her race card was marked in pencil with potential winners, and her diary had entries for what she'd be doing the following week. Barbara believes these are all unlikely actions for someone planning suicide. She thinks Emily was trying to put the sash over the horse's head so that the words Votes for Women and the suffragette colours would be carried past the winning post on the king's horse to make the political point. The sash was picked up by one of the clerks of the course, who found it lying on the ground beside Emily. Richard Pitway Burton was a suffragette sympathiser and knew Emily personally. He said later that he took it for safekeeping. At the memorial service, he wrapped it around his infant daughter, Alice, walking with her in the funeral cortege along 100,000 mourners. Alice was given the sash by her father when he returned home from the trenches after the First World War. She was then only 6 years old, and it then lay unremarked for the next 80 years. In later life, Alice put the scarf up for auction at Sotheby's with a solicitor's note of authenticity, and so it passed into Barbara Gurner's hands. Or rather, it moved under her bed, where it again stayed for 8 years. Then she met Bonnie Soans of what was then Women's Parliamentary Radio. In conversation, the sash was mentioned. And Bonnie leapt on the information. "Where is it? Can I see it? What are you doing with it?" she asked. Prompted by Bonnie's enthusiasm, the campaign to bring Emily's relic into Westminster began. A significant collaboration of women across party and within the Commons Curator's Office saw the importance of acquiring the scarf on loan from Barbara. They worked together to get the necessary approvals at committee level to ensure Emily got to Westminster. It took time, but eventually the sash was carried to the House of Commons by Barbara in a supermarket bag. The deputy curator, Melanie Unwin, was horrified, but Barbara feels Emily would have seen the joke. She also feels Emily wouldn't have liked her scarf to be treated as a sacred artefact to be preserved at all costs. So the sash, and presumably Emily's DNA on it, still gets out and about a bit. For instance, it took part in the Olympic opening ceremony, when Danny Boyle gave Emily a starring role leading the procession of the suffragettes. But from now on, and for most of the time, the faded silk will reside behind glass in one of the corridors just off Central Lobby in the House of Commons, where visitors have to pass when they walk into the public gallery to watch Commons debates. It joins a small display of other tokens of the female struggle to gain political power, such as a plaque about Nancy Astor, the first woman MP to take her seat. There is no grand memorial to the suffragette movement in Parliament, but a torn strap of purple and green material is perhaps a more powerful reminder of the long struggle for women's rights than any oversized statue of white marble. Linda Fairbrother reporting for Parliamentary Radio for Women.
Order, order.
On Wings, you're listening to audio from Parliamentary Radio for Women in the United Kingdom, related to suffragist Emily Wilding Davison. Next, reporter Bonnie Soans stands by Davison's scarf while interviewing Helen Goodman, a Labour Party Member of Parliament and the Shadow Minister for Culture, Media and Sport.
Helen, thank you very much indeed for talking to Parliamentary Radio for Women. Under the scarf of Emily Wilding Davison, the suffragette who died 100 years ago today, but you are campaigning for a crackdown on internet porn following the April Jones case and the conviction for life of Mark Bridger.
Yes, I'm extremely alarmed to hear that 1.5 million people have come across child abuse sites while just browsing the web, and I think this shows that we need a radical change and new action to prevent this level of horrible material on the net.
Now, action has been taken before by MPs, suggestions made, meetings indeed in the House with the internet companies like Google, Bing or whatever. What's new about the April Jones case?
I think what was really worrying about it was that we saw here a man who had no previous convictions or record of offences against children, but what he did have was a large library of child abuse images, and therefore the connection between what he was viewing and then his subsequent violent murder of April seems to be a very strong connection. That's what's new.
Now, Google and the other internet providers would say that they're already asking users to report internet porn, and they take action sometimes very quickly. So does the Internet Watch Foundation. You can report internet porn to them. What more is needed?
Well, the stance they have at the moment is purely reactive. So when somebody reports in, then they take action. But we need them to be proactive, to take measures to cut the demand for viewing extreme pornography and child abuse by introducing safe search as the default, so that people have the filters already on the machinery, don't have to download them themselves, which is difficult and technical. We need a proper age verification system. This really is the linchpin of the whole thing. We have a proper age verification system on gambling sites. And that means that people have to give some real-life information about themselves to prove they're adults, their driving license, their passport number, something like that. That would be very important because, first, it would protect children from seeing these images, and second, paedophiles would lose the anonymity behind which they hide when they're looking for unpleasant images. And thirdly, we want warnings on screen to people to tell them what it is they're going into.
That seems a sensible suggestion. Have you got all party support for it? And are the internet providers and search engines signed up to it?
We haven't got the industry signed up to it as yet. I know there is support across the parties, and I hope that the government will come forward and agree that this is what we should now be doing, because this is now becoming an urgent problem. And I think that we've been far too lackadaisical, and we really do need to press on with this as an urgent matter. I'm very disappointed that the government have shelved their green paper, their white paper on communications. I was hoping they'd have a bill in the Queen's speech. They haven't. That would have been the ideal place for this. I really don't think this can wait.
Have you had any contact with April's family? Her mother, her father, her grandparents have talked about a life sentence not being good enough. Surely this should galvanise the government into action. They could put an amendment to a bill that's already in this going through.
Well, obviously, we will look at opportunities for doing that. I haven't spoken to any of the victims' families because, obviously, they're under extreme pressure and stress at a time like this. And actually, I can see that there is a solution without troubling them as individuals. And I think it's really the responsibility of Parliament to step forward at a time like this. That's what we're here to do. That's what we should be doing.
What about comments like Nick Ross this week and last week, the presenter of the BBC's Crime Watch programme? He said that, you know, how women dress influences rape. That also he can understand men accidentally or pressing on view to go to child internet porn sites. That basically saying it wasn't such a serious crime as people made it out to be. Do you agree?
I think that's wholly wrong and quite disgusting. Every time a person views a child abuse image, they are giving money to the people who made the image, to the people who tortured the child or raped the child or whatever it is. And that money circle is absolutely crucial, that we have to break that. And that, I'm afraid, seems to me to be one of the motivations of the industry. I don't know how much traffic is pornographic, maybe 10%, maybe 15%, but they have got to be prepared to say no to this income, which is being made out of the misery of other people.
What about critics of your reforms who say we should have free speech, the internet is new media, it should allow free speech, and what you're suggesting amounts to censorship?
I'm in favour of free speech as well, and we saw in the Arab Spring that the new media can be very powerful for groups who want to overthrow repressive regimes. But when we're talking about extreme pornography or child abuse, I think we're in a different zone altogether. What I'm trying to do is reproduce the conditions we have in the cinema. When you go to the cinema, children cannot go and see 18 plus rated films, only adults can go and see those. And a cinema which continuously flouted those rules would lose their license from the local authority. What I'm saying here is that on the internet, we should reproduce the conditions which we've had for many, many years on television and in the cinema.
Now, there's going to be a memorial service for April now that Mark Britcher has been convicted and jailed for life. There's a £70,000 fund being administered and will be given out to local charities. People like Bonnie Tyler have given generously to this fund. Do you think that there's something, if you like, we can do in Westminster as a group of women across party to take forward your ideas so that it happens sooner rather than later? Surely that's the pressing need, not that this is sidelined for the next 3 or 4 years, but it happens soon.
Well, that is absolutely right. And we did have an all-party parliamentary group with people from all parties, chaired by Tory, in fact, which was looking previously at child protection on the net. And that's how I know that women across Parliament are really concerned about this.
So just in one sentence, what is it you would like to happen?
I would like a proper age verification system so that people who want to view extreme pornography and child abuse lose anonymity and pause before they press the yes button.
And that's in memory of April Jones.
Yes.
Helen, one more thing. Today is a very special day in Westminster and indeed all over the UK, where there are celebrations 100 years after Emily Wilding Davidson, the suffragette, died at the Epsom Derby trying to pin a suffragette scarf on the King's Horse. We're standing under that suffragette scarf owned by Barbara Gorner. A message for Emily: are women still campaigning as vigorously today?
Well, I don't think we are campaigning quite as vigorously. I think she's a tremendously inspiring person, and I hope young women in particular draw strength from this story and realise that they can achieve things, they can make a difference, and that women are equal to men, and it's in our hands to make ourselves equal.
We'll hear the Big Ben chimes. Helen Goodman, thank you very much indeed for talking to Parliamentary Radio for Women here today in Central Lobby near the scarf of Emily Wilding Davidson. Perhaps the chimes were for her and in memory of April.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking to you.
On Wings, we're sharing audio from Women's Parliamentary Radio, showing the influence of British suffragist Emily Wilding Davidson on Parliament today. Davidson died in 1913 after falling under the hooves of the King's Horse during the Epsom Derby. Next, you'll hear attendees from all parties who gathered at Westminster to call for a statue of Davidson in the Halls of Parliament. The host was Emily Thornberry, the only Emily who has ever been in Parliament. She spearheads the campaign for a statue of her namesake.
I'm Emily Thornberry, I'm the Labour MP for Islington South and Finsbury, and I'm the Shadow Attorney General.
Why is it important to get this statue?
First of all, just simply to redress the balance. I mean, out of 100 statues that aren't kings and queens, 96 of them are to men. And, you know, if John Major can have two statues, then really I think that we can have a statue to Emily Davidson. I think that she's an inspirational figure, as is shown by tonight. You know, yes, women have not been in Parliament for very long. There are not that many, and yes, it's actually about time. You know, if you listen to people, they say, oh, well, you know, this corridor's for MPs from this century, and this is for this century. I don't really care, actually. I don't want to show people just a broken sword, which is one of the statues where the suffragette attached herself, and to say, this is the memorial to the suffragettes. We really could do better than that. And it just strikes me that if we have £100,000 a year, that we should be spending it on a statue to this extraordinary suffragette.
Are role models important?
Of course they're important. Of course they're important, and they're particularly important, I think, to women. And they're particularly important when you want to have change. And so I think that people need to be encouraged, and say women need to be encouraged, and it always helps. It's always much more helpful to kind of be in the slipstream of someone else, and true feminists understand that it's your job to pull other people up too.
What do you think Emily Wilding Davidson would make of today's society? Would she think that we've achieved enough?
No, I'm quite sure she wouldn't think that we've achieved enough. And I'm quite sure that she would also be an internationalist and look across the world and see not just what's happening in Britain, but how things are happening, you know, everywhere else. And she would be furious at these young women who cannot be bothered to vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice, you're not listened to. You know, that's what the suffragettes understood. That's why they fought as hard as they did. It's not right, having given the struggle that people had, for women who've now been given this right to now not exercise it.
So thank you very much.
Not at all. It's a pleasure.
I've been told to hold the microphone very close. Does that make it any better? Okay. Good evening, everybody. What a fantastic event. Thank you so much for coming. Look at this. We have a wonderful evening ahead of us. We have some fantastic speakers. And what I'd like to do is just kick off straight away to invite the Speaker of the House to speak to us first. And I hope that we all have a very enjoyable and informative evening. Well.
Emily, thank you very much indeed for that introduction. And perhaps I might just express my delight, which I trust you share, that such a hugely well-attended event is a testament to the strength of opinion across the parties in Parliament, and I think it really does demonstrate the significance of the person we are celebrating and the magnificence of the cause for which she so bravely and justifiably against authority and bigwigs fought. Colleagues, I confess that I am somewhat embarrassed and ashamed to disclose the fact that one of my predecessors as Speaker of the House, Speaker Lowther, wrote to the Sergeant at Arms of the House, one H.D. Erskine, on the 24th of June 1910, in what I presume, by the way, was the manner and style of the time, forgive me saying so, a very sort of public school practice, not dear Sergeant or dear Mr. Erskine or dear whatever H stood for. Dear Erskine, a lady who breaks the windows of the Crown Office and gets into our ventilating shaft is evidently not a desirable personage to have hanging about St. Stephen's Hall, so her name had better go on the index expurgatorius. Yours sincerely, James W. Lowther.
She was first elected over 30 years ago after a bitterly fought by-election. Not only was she a woman, but she was also heavily pregnant at the time. She is the inspiration to many women parliamentarians from all parties, and I know that she is the inspiration of thousands of women in the Labour Party, including myself. She became the first ever Minister for Women in 1997, and she has said, "I'm in the Labour Party because I'm a feminist. I'm in the Labour Party because I believe in equality." The Right Honourable Harriet Harman.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, and I'd like to thank you, Emily Thornberry, for bringing us all together to remember Emily Davison and to mark her centenary and to renew our vows. And I think it's an important moment for us to think about not only how much she suffered in her campaign for equality, I think the force feeding that she underwent would count as torture currently, absolutely brutal, how brave and courageous she was and how much she suffered for progress, how far she got and how far we still have to go on what was her mission and what is still our task, which is to bring true equality to our democracy in order to make our democracy worthy of that name, because it's not a proper democracy until it's truly equal. So I say this, is that don't let them lead. The women's movement must be led by women. Because if we owe our advance to men, we will have not made the progress we need. So women have to be the engine of our own liberation. And I think that's my seventh and final pledge in testament to Emily Davison. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Harriet. It's my great pleasure to introduce our next speaker, who is the Right Honourable Theresa May MP. She's also the Home Secretary. She's represented Maidenhead since 1997, formerly the Conservative Minister for Women and Equalities. In February 2013, Woman's Hour assessed her as the second most powerful woman in the country. I imagine the most powerful must be the Queen. She was first woman chair of the Conservative Party, and the Fawcett Society, in one of their famous myth-busting campaigns, asked Theresa to put on a T-shirt saying, "This is what a feminist looks like." If you join the Fawcett Society, you can get a Theresa May T-shirt as well. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Theresa May.
Thank you very much indeed, Emily. And can I start off by congratulating you on having had to put this event on in Westminster Hall, because there are so many people here tonight. It is so appropriate that we are here, not just because of the work that Emily Davison and others did to secure the rights of women to vote and stand for election, but because this Palace of Westminster was the scene of many of her protests. But in the space of 12 months, she was found hiding in a ventilation shaft, climbing over railings at 2 a.m, breaking windows in the Crown Office and the Division Lobby, and of course hiding in the broom cupboard in the Chapel of St Mary Undercroft, as we all know, so she could give her address in the census as House of Commons. And 7 years later, women were finally given the vote and allowed to stand for Parliament. Now, since 1918, there have been 369 women elected to Parliament. They've risen to the very top. We've had a female Speaker and a female Prime Minister. But there is, of course, still a long way to go, because while there have been 369 women over 95 years, there are 503 men in the current House of Commons alone. We need to ensure that we are encouraging others to come through. That's incumbent on all of us who are here in Parliament today. But I think it's incumbent on all women who have an interest to make sure that the work that all of the suffragettes did and the legacy of Emily Wilding Davidson is not forgotten, but that we can hold our heads high and say, yes, we have taken that forward. Yes, we have ensured proper representation of women in this Parliament. And yes, women make first-class members of Parliament. Let's go out and tell everybody that and encourage more young women to see Parliament and politics as a way of making a real difference to the lives of other people.
Barbara Keeley, I'm chair of the Labour Party Women's Committee. I think we just must reflect, as people die in war, that she died for something that she really believed in. I know there's a question mark about whether it was suicide or whether it was an accidental injury, but she did something very dangerous to help other people and to help women to get the vote. And I think those of us that are women MPs will always remember that and feel grateful for the sacrifice she made.
You've been listening to members of the British Parliament from all parties gathered to call for a statue of Emily Wilding Davison to be erected in Parliament. Wings thanks Women's Parliamentary Radio for use of their programs. You can find them online at parliamentaryradio.com. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughan, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service. To end our show, here are members of the British Parliament singing suffrage songs.
I have seen the women in the Commons and the Lords. They have trampled out the prejudice that was so long ignored. They have lit the torch of liberty. Let us live.